Act 1, see something, slay something. Our first story is about a kid who really doesn't want to question the adults in her life. She's in middle school in Texas, great student, likes her teachers, and she wants to trust the authority of adults, wants to believe they know what's best for her, even when the most powerful people in her school begin to make that very difficult. Talia Richman covers education for the Dallas Morning News. She tells us what happened.
When this story begins, Madison was 13, starting eighth grade, and she'd finally cracked the middle school code. She had a good group of friends, people from her cheer team and some kids in the theater program. She messaged them all the time in group chats, said they were like a lunch table she could carry around in her pocket. And she was speaking up more in class, like in math, her favorite subject.
It's not like reading and writing where there could be an infinite amount of answers to what does this poem mean, but in math, there's always a singular answer to a question.
I wish I felt that way about math. But when you can never get to that singular answer, it's not so fun.
Yeah.
Madison hoped to get into this prestigious high school program, the same one her older brother and sister had gone to. She seemed totally on track to do that. Until this one morning, her second semester, January 26th. Madison was in second period, PE, sitting in her assigned spot toward the bleachers. And she noticed the new kid in class in front of her. He was talking to another boy. And she heard the new kid say something.
So I heard this kid was telling his friend, "Don't come to school tomorrow." And the other kid asked why. And the kid was like, "Don't worry about it." I don't think my mind first went to a gun threat. Because, like, I subconsciously didn't think that kid was a danger. I mean, he was a new kid. And it was like, well, it could have just been a joke.
The bell rings. Madison leaves the gym, goes through the rest of her school day. Then, in the last class of the day, she starts thinking about what she heard. Don't come to school tomorrow.
Then I was like, well, I can't just not take that seriously. And I really started getting stressed out over it. And I think the only thing that was going through my head is, I can't keep this to myself. And I wasn't going to be able to do anything, like, alone with that information. Like, I had to tell someone.
Madison was a toddler when Sandy Hook happened. As far back as she remembers, her schools have done lockdown drills every year. In her middle school, there are posters telling kids, see something, say something. When school lets out, she decides to text one of her closest friends.
I wanted validation that my suspicions may be correct.
She explains what she heard the new boy in PE say, and she texts, "I can't remember if he was smiling or not, but I don't think he was." The more Madison tells her friend, the more worried the friend gets. WTF, she writes in all caps. That's crazy. Madison and her friend agree to message a handful of their best friends across two group chats to tell them what she overheard and to warn them. Then Madison tells her friends she's going to talk with her mom.
I said, well, hold on.
This is her mom, Lisa.
It was like 4:45, 4:50. And so I was like, okay, everyone's gone. Give mom a second. I started pacing the floor because I was like, who can I reach out to so that we can escalate this concern?
Lisa regularly uses phrases like escalate this concern. She's an operations director, manages more than 100 employees. She's good at putting out fires. Her kids sometimes say that mom is in her Olivia Pope mode.
And so what mom needs you to do now is to cease and desist on any further conversation and let some adults look into it. And about that time, my phone rang, and it was Ms. Samples.
Ms. Sharla Samples is the assistant principal at Madison's school. She was calling because the school had actually gotten wind of the situation already because of Madison's text to her friends. Word travels fast in a middle school.
And so I said, you know, thank you for calling. Madison just, you know, alerted me to a concern, and I was just trying to figure out how to contact you.
Ms. Samples wanted to know more details from Lisa and Madison. Madison cried as she told her everything over speakerphone. Ms. Samples was reassuring.
And she told me at the end of the phone call that she was going to take care of it and that school's going to be safe.
Later that evening, school police went to the boys' house. They found no weapons and no intent to carry out violence of any kind. It was a false alarm. Everything was okay. Everyone was safe. So the school shooting scare was just that, a scare. In my experience as an education reporter, that sort of thing happens all the time. What I'd never seen is what happened to Madison the next day at school. During first period, Madison gets called to Ms. Sample's office. That's the assistant principal who called Lisa and Madison the night before. Madison had actually never been to the principal's office before. She thinks maybe they have an update about yesterday.
So I go to Ms. Sample's office, and she tells me, you can take a seat.
Ms. Samples, in her assistant principal kind of way, asked Madison some questions about the day before. Asked to see the text Madison sent her friends. And then Madison shows her the text, tries to answer all of her questions. Ms. Samples looks over everything, and then she turns to Madison.
And she says, so I was looking through the evidence that I gathered, and I've decided that this was a false accusation.
Ms. Samples had determined that by texting her friends first, before telling an adult, she had essentially spread a rumor that there'd be a school shooting. And page 11 of the Student Code of Conduct said students cannot, quote, make false accusations or perpetrate hoaxes regarding school safety.
At first, I was like, wait, I'm in trouble? Like, I could barely, like, comprehend what she was saying. I was very confused, because they told us, see something, say something. And I did do that. And she told me that, like, we all have to face the consequences of our actions. And she said, unfortunately, the punishment is DAEP placement.
DAEP stands for Disciplinary Alternative Education Program. It's Texas's version of school for kids with serious discipline problems, a place where kids get sent for fighting or selling drugs. Madison didn't know much about DAEP, except that it was a bad thing. And this wouldn't be some quick stint at DAEP. She'd be going there for the next 73 school days, the rest of eighth grade.
And I remember, like, my jaw physically dropped. And it took me a minute to process what she said, because before this, I felt like I was doing the right thing and that I was helping. So she gave me some tissues because I started crying. And I sat there, like, sobbing, like, thinking, what am I gonna do? What am I gonna tell my mom?
When Lisa got the call from Ms. Samples, the call where Lisa would learn her daughter was being sent to DAEP for the rest of eighth grade, she was at her sister's place.
It almost felt like I was having an out-of-body experience. Like, it felt like she had the wrong kid. I mean, my kid's a good kid. She's never been in trouble. She doesn't talk back to teachers. They love her. They have great things to say about her. I was so out of my mind that I thought, I'm not going to remember anything this woman is saying. And so I told my sister, put your phone on record because I'm going to need to replay this so that I can remember what she's saying.
Financial disruption in the school.
And so can I ask a question? So I think that there's a lot of angles to perceive this by. I think that Maddie owes the young man an apology if she misinterpreted him. But I implore you, can we talk about this some more? If there's anything,
we can talk about it some more.
Okay, if there's anything within your ability to make a different decision, then I'm pleading with you to try to look at this through a different lens.
On the call, Lisa tries to get Ms. Samples to explain the school's reasoning. How did they consider this a false accusation?
Her claim was is that a kid said, don't come to school tomorrow. And the kid said, why not? And the other kid said, don't worry about it. Is the false claim that that conversation never existed, that those words were not said?
It is not that the words were not said. It is that she took those words and she put her own inference on them, and then she went and told her friends that there was going to be a school shooting.
Ms. Sample said that students are supposed to immediately tell an adult or call an anonymous tip line after they hear something suspicious. Hearing her answer filled in part of the story for me, because the school district, Louisville ISD, never made Ms. Samples or any other administrators available for me to interview.
I think one of the biggest things that is bothersome is that she held on to the information for so long, and then she chose to spread it on, like, she took the safety of what she felt at the time, whatever she interpreted it as, and then she didn't tell the right authorities, and she spread it, and
she,
it caused
but,
a panic, and
right,
it but, essentially is considered a false accusation in the student code of conduct.
And so, for waiting all day, then texting her friends about 30 minutes before telling her mom, they were giving Madison 73 school days in DAEP, kicking her out of her middle school. When Lisa first told me about her daughter's punishment, I think I gasped a half dozen times. I had never heard of anything like this. In another big Texas district, fighting another student could get you up to 45 days in DAEP on your third offense. Making a, quote, terroristic threat would get you 30 days. I couldn't make sense of why Madison's middle school was throwing the book at her. It is true that schools across the U.S. are dealing with a big increase in shooting threats. Some are hoaxes, but a hoax can still disrupt school. And threats that turn out to be fake, those still scare kids and parents. So maybe Madison's middle school felt like they had to take a tough stance on kids who were involved in any way in a threat that doesn't materialize. But 73 days? Lisa was also racking her brain for an explanation. And she told me, at first, she didn't let herself consider that a punishment this severe had anything to do with the fact that Madison, like her, is Black.
And I really tried to keep my mind away from that, but she's 5'6". She wears her hair natural, very big, very proud. And I just felt like maybe she wasn't being given the same lens that they would look at a fair, blue-eyed, petite girl.
Black students are often given a different lens when it comes to school discipline. Federal civil rights investigations have repeatedly found evidence of Black kids being punished more severely for the same things that a white kid might get away with. In Madison's school district, only 12% of students are Black. But in the latest data, they made up 33% of all kids in DAEP. Lisa was hyper-conscious of maintaining her cool during the phone call.
If I went in there being irate, I was just going to be another angry Black woman. So I kept it very even-toned because I wanted to negotiate. I wanted you to feel comfortable enough and not have your defenses up to talk with me. Let's lay this out and let's talk about this.
Sure. And so here's another question for you is, so...
Ms. Samples keeps trying to explain the disruption Madison caused and how she potentially tarnished the boy's reputation at school. Sure, Lisa agrees, that is bad, but...
We're holding her to a standard of a grown-up with a mature brain, and she's a 13-year-old who made an error, but it wasn't done with malice, but this punishment feels very punitive, as though she did whatever she did with malice. And I keep using that word, malice. She seriously thought there was a threat. So I really wish that we could talk through this some more and think of other ways to make this a learning opportunity for Madison and not turning her into a juvenile delinquent.
I understand your point.
Ms. Samples listens, but stays firm. She tells Lisa there's a formal process if you want to appeal this. But she isn't going to undo or reduce the punishment or explain its severity. Lisa does decide to appeal the school's decision. The administration gives her a hearing date, and Lisa goes into Olivia Pope mode, spends hours each day preparing a defense of her daughter. She keeps Madison at home, out of alternative school, as they wait for the appeal hearing, which leaves Madison with a lot of time to think about the punishment and what this will mean for her future plans. And one thought really seeds inside her. What if Ms. Sample's punishment is really bad because what I did was really bad?
Like, in my eyes, I thought, she knows what she's doing and she knows the correct punishments to give, and I shouldn't question it.
What's behind that belief? Is that how you've always felt about school principals?
Yeah. I thought that there were rules there for a reason, and the principals put them there because they know what they're doing and, you know.
For a kid who's never been to the principal's office before, it's a powerful feeling, and it begins to take a toll on her. She starts eating less. Her doctor puts her on anti-anxiety medications. The appeal takes place at the middle school, 12 days after Madison got in trouble. It feels like a court date. Madison, her mom, and her grandma show up with the family's new lawyer. They sit at a table along with Ms. Samples and the head principal, Dr. Barry Deister. Both women are white.
What were you thinking about seeing Samples and Deister for the first time since this happened? Did you have an idea of how you wanted to come off to them?
Well, at first, I just wanted to be as polite as I could. But then my grandma was like, stop smiling.
Why do you think she said that?
Because she said, we're not here to be friends.
Did you agree?
I don't think I fully agreed.
Madison knows that the point of this appeal is to get the punishment reversed, to get her official record cleared, and to get herself back into normal eighth grade. But that's not all Madison wants out of this hearing.
What were you hoping that you could get them to understand about your situation?
That I wasn't the kid that they were seeing me as. And, maybe they saw me wrong. Maybe they just don't know me enough.
What was the kid they were seeing you as in your mind?
Not a good kid. The kind who would cause trouble and lie about stuff. I was thinking maybe if we have all these advocates for me, my mom, my grandma, this lawyer, that we could give the facts, rationalize, and just talk it through with them, and it would all be okay.
All right, let's begin. This hearing is convened on February 8th, 2023, for the purpose of an appeal of a...
Dr. Deister, the head principal, kicks things off. First, she asks Ms. Samples to review the school's official timeline of events. The tone is pretty damning toward Madison.
Madison's choice had a great impact on many different people. Several people were scared about the safety of the school because her messages started spreading. Communication had to be sent out to the whole school community because the message started spreading.
Hands were shaking. I remember feeling like I was in her office again.
At this time, the student and or those wishing to speak on the student's behalf are invited to do so.
This is Dr. Deister again.
This is your opportunity to explain why you disagree with the investigation findings or the disciplinary decision and what outcome you are requesting.
I had prepared what I was going to say because I didn't want to be emotional. And Madison, I knew she was agitated and she looked nervous. She looked really nervous.
Just like in her eyes?
Yeah, I could see it in her eyes. I didn't want to let her down. I did not want to let her down. Thank you for allowing me to respond to the assertions that Madison engaged in perpetrating a false hoax or disrupting school.
Lisa peppers her rebuttal with references to the Texas education statutes.
And then under Section 4206, it goes on to say that the student has to knowingly initiate that they are making a false claim that is baseless or false. So Madison did not violate this code.
And then she asked them to remember that Madison's a kid, how it's a normal thing for kids to check in with their friends for advice.
I think that the school did the right thing by jumping into action and making the assessment that this was not a threat. But if it had been something that he meant different when he said those words, we would be thanking Madison for raising the bell.
Lisa concludes. Madison's grandmother speaks up for her, so does their lawyer. Then it's Madison's turn. School administrators have the right to ask Madison questions, and she's really nervous about it.
So, Madison, you and I talked a little bit, right? Can you remind me what you said, why you chose not to tell someone at school?
I believe I said it wasn't the first thing on my mind.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
No, okay, and I really want you to remind me, because I know we talked about it. I just wanted to hear what you had said again. So help me understand why you put it in two different groups.
I just wanted to make sure all of my friends knew and that they were safe.
Okay. So how did it go from don't come to school to guns?
Because today, that's what you think of. You think there's going to be some sort of school violence at school. So.
But you didn't hear him say guns, right?
Right.
It was at that moment, sitting there in her swivel chair, being interrogated by her principal, that Madison realized something.
Like, the way she asked the questions, like, she wasn't trying to find out my perspective at all. And it was like a light switch being turned on. Like, oh, maybe they aren't as I saw them before. Like, they're not on my side. They were trying to form a case against me.
At the end of the hearing, Ms. Samples recommends that Madison's sentence be reduced from 73 days in DAEP to 30 days. There's no explanation as to why. The principals were lowering Madison's punishment, but they weren't erasing it.
Even after all of the reasoning and the logical talking we tried to do with them, they still thought that I deserved punishment. And that kind of, like, rooted the idea that, okay, they don't like me.
Lisa watched her daughter from across the table, and she realized Madison was getting a lesson that Lisa had hoped she'd be able to put off for a while.
It's something she was going to learn later in life, that there were going to be cards stacked against her for being a woman, being a woman of color. There were going to be all these things that she was going to have to combat. And that I was sorry that that lesson happened at 13 and not when she was older and more equipped and educated to, you know, battle it. I deal with it every day. And that was sad to me.
Lisa and Madison didn't have to live with 30 days. In Madison School District, there are 3 levels of appeal, and they could try again. And this time, the judges don't work at Madison's middle school. They plead their case to a committee, of three administrators from different schools in the district, not Dr. Dyster. Their decision arrives by email in less than a day.
So I was in bed and like with one eye open, I, you know, saw that something came through. And so it took me a second to kind of get my vision together. But when I read it, I just ran upstairs and jumped in her bed. And I was like, we won.
When educators outside the school looked at the situation, they saw Madison the way she saw herself, as a kid who never meant to cause a disruption, a kid who maybe just needed a refresher on how to best go about reporting suspicious activity. After about 3 weeks of being away, Madison was cleared to go back to school. Shortly after I wrote about Madison's story for the Dallas Morning News, the district launched an investigation into the way she was punished. Dr. Dyster went on administrative leave and eventually resigned. She didn't respond to her request to be interviewed for this story, but in an email, she said her decision to leave was voluntary. She also wrote, quote, "All I can say is that every day administrators are faced with making harder and harder decisions, and in those decision-making efforts, I have always done my best to treat others with kindness, with dignity, and to follow the district guidelines." This whole mess didn't derail Madison the way she feared. She's in ninth grade now. She got into that special high school program.
I learned this word in class the other day. It's open-minded skepticism, where you view things from both a perspective of interest, and you can also be like cautious about things and be skeptical.
And that was your new worldview?
Yeah.
And it felt different from before in that it was all open-minded, none of the skepticism?
Right.
Madison says it was so much easier back when she just believed she could trust every adult. This new way of dealing with the world, where she has to figure out which adults she can trust and which ones deserve her skepticism, it just takes a lot more brain power.
Talia Richmond is a reporter with the Dallas Morning News. This story was produced by Chris Benderev.